This is Mae Brussel. It's part two of World Watchers, broadcast number 715. And the 60 seconds go fast. Okay, now back to the strange case of Simon Wiesenthal, the chronology of Wiesenthal. Incidentally, the man who wrote the Bolero Secret, who cited Wiesenthal as working for the FBI and the CIA in covering up the top Nazis, Franz Kuschel and Emanuel Jasowicz, who were being tried in absentia in the Soviet Union for their war atrocities. John Loftus is the same gentleman who was on national television the evening of June 22nd after the decision, including the Simon Wiesenthal Center, that body buried in 1979 was Joseph Mengele. And Mr. Loftus, who worked for the Justice Department as an attorney in Boston, said that no scientific evidence used to identify any body was used in this case. He gave the four ways that they were totally ignored, with dental records, medical records, photographs, actual physical evidence. They didn't use any single one of those to say it was Joseph Mengele. And the first person on the bandwagon, day two, confirming it was and offering some information that was absolutely of no value but was included in it, was Simon Wiesenthal. And that's why, as I say, I'm doing this work on him now to share with you. Now, there was an interview in Saga magazine I mentioned before. The date was 1976, September 76, an interview with Simon Wiesenthal, and that's where they said, asked him, another famous Nazi criminal, Martin Bormann, was never captured. And he said, no one was closer to Bormann than Wiesenthal, the skeleton. He's saying, no one is closer. The skeleton dug up in 1974 and identified Bormann has finally closed my files on him. The case is now shut and in the archives. My file. A man from Wall Street Journal, Mr. Paul Manning, can write Nazi, Martin Bormann, Nazi in exile, but Jew Wiesenthal, he's closed his file for his purposes. So you have to say, well, what are his purposes? In 1976, he closed that, and that was the flimsiest case and the fake burial and so forth that has been exposed ever since. But Wiesenthal doesn't change his mind, and like that song in Evita, the money keeps rolling in. Now, in Saga magazine, he describes in 1976 a funeral in Linz where he was had his office just a couple blocks from from Eichmann's home in Linz in Austria. And there was a funeral. Eichmann's father passed away. And Wiesenthal had located Mrs. Eichmann and her three children and a man living in Buenos Aires, Argentina. And he thought maybe that Eichmann would come to his father's funeral. So he hired two professional photographers to go to the funeral and take pictures of all the people at the grave ceremony, and he thought that he might be recognized there. So he had someone take the pictures, and then they took the microscopic, looked at these pictures for every detail of the face and studied them with the magnifying glass, not a microscope, a magnifying glass, and studied them to see if he had attended his father's funeral. Now, in 1976, he's giving this lengthy account of how careful he was to try to locate Adolf Eichmann. But you remember the account that Joseph Mengele went to his father's funeral, but the cameras weren't there. If he doesn't want the cameras there, it's one thing. But as I say, in his bulletin, he cites only me, looking for him for 40 years, pursuing this man on this lonely road, which is really offensive to me, to know what he does and doesn't do, and to claim that I'm the only person looking for these Nazis. There was a funeral in Germany, in Gunzburg, Germany, and he did go to that funeral. Now, incidentally and interestingly, Petra Kelly from the German Green Party has been linked or associated with various Nazis. That subject came up on David Emery Niptuck's program up north about Petra Kelly. There was an article in the London Observer, June 23rd, 1985, which is very interesting. It says, the German Green MP Petra Kelly has asked Cardinal Joseph Hofner of Cologne to clear up rumors that Joseph Mengele was hiding in a convent in his hometown of Gunzburg during his 1959 visit to attend his father's funeral. Kelly, who comes from Gunzburg, the same town as the Mengele family, told the London Observer yesterday, Everybody in town talks about how Mengele attended his father's funeral, but only among themselves. She said that two nuns at the convent girls' school, the English Institute, told her when she was campaigning in the 1983 elections that a man had stayed there and they thought it was Mengele. Kelly comes from a Catholic family, said one of the nuns is now dead and she would not reveal the identity of the other one, but she knew both of them well. The nuns at the convent dismissed the story as nonsense, but Kelly said she was told by a number of people in town, "We saw him at the funeral." An old journalist has told her there ought to be photos in the archives of the local newspaper, the Gunsberger Zeitung, showing a man in a camel coat standing somewhat back from the grave. "The whole town is rather reactionary," Kelly said, "and is dependent on the Mengele family firm for its existence." Prompted by the planned visit to West Germany by Paraguayan dictator Alfredo Stroessner, who at one time sheltered Mengele, she asked the Bonn government if it knew about the reports of the fugitive's visit to Gunsberg. And Cardinal Hofner was very evasive, and she had been at that school and had studied there and came from that town of Gunsberg, and everyone there knew that he was there in a particular coat in their pictures. So the very vigil Simon Wiesenthal wasn't too interested in pursuing the Mengele story, just the Adolf Eichmann, and then all the other records were away. But when Mengele became big and linked to Klaus Barbie and the cocaine traffic and DeLorean, in comes Wiesenthal and gets on the bandwagon to at least close the case if he didn't ever open the Mengele case. Now, 1963, the story of the Diary of Anne Frank came out, and there were demonstrations when the play opened up in Vienna saying there was no such person and it wasn't true. So Simon Wiesenthal was very proud of himself because he discovered that the policeman, the member of the Gestapo who came in and took the whole family off to the concentration camp where they all died except for the father, they were taken from Amsterdam in 1944. The man who did that is now on the Vienna police force. Well, 1963 is a long time ago. We're talking about 22 years ago. But Simon Wiesenthal identified him. Now, he stayed on the police force. He took them all to the camp. They all died. But he was very proud to show that he had located the man. Well, so what? He's still a policeman, this SS Gestapo in Vienna. Our ambassador, Helene von Damm, the translator for Otto von Bolschwing, was placed as ambassador to Vienna. And the police force there are the people who routed up and took these Jews off to their death. Now, in 1966, something interesting happened, and I referred to Wiesenthal as cutting a deal. And this may help explain his early background with the OSS and later with these organizations. It makes it very clear in my mind who and what he is and what he's doing. But in 1966, I'm reading a quotation from the Washington Post, printed in 1979, April the 1st. He said he had his documentation center opened again because the Eichmann case brought fame to Wiesenthal and renewed interest elsewhere. After his center was opened, he got information and tips on Nazis. He wasn't out getting it. Somebody came to him. In 1966, a man showed up in Vienna offices who promised to disclose the whereabouts of Fritz Stangl, commandant of the Treblinka death camp. Now, Stangl ran the death camp at Treblinka, but over him was SS Karl Wolff, who was flying between Treblinka and Bern, Switzerland, to be with Alan Dulles and William Donovan of the OSS, cutting deals for after the war, and Stangl wasn't even recognized or put in through any trials or anything for a while. He escaped. We'll go more on that later, and so was Karl Wolff out free. The men who ran Treblinka were working with our intelligence establishment. Somebody comes to Wiesenthal and said, "I'll tell you where Stangl is. If Wiesenthal promised never to try and identify or track the man down who was standing before him, and he would give him," he asked for $25,000. Wiesenthal said, "What do you want?" The man asked him, "Stangl, do you want Stangl to escalate again? I have Eichmann. You can have Stangl. I'll tell you where he is." Wiesenthal wasn't doing the job. "Do you want Stangl or morality?" the man asked. And Wiesenthal signed a pledge on both conditions. He offered $7,000. In 1967, a year later, Stangl was arrested in Brazil, in São Paulo, Brazil, by Romeo Tuma. He was sent to Germany. He never stood trial. He had a suicide in jail, so he never did stand trial. He was arrested by Romeo Tuma, the same man who's to dig up the Mengele bodies later. And then a man came, showed up to Wiesenthal's office with Wiesenthal's signature on a piece of paper, and he paid him the money to the anonymous informer. And the point is, who was the Nazi? In Wiesenthal's own book, this is from the Washington Post, in his own book, I'll read you the quotation about the persons that came to him and offered Stengel. This is a deal. Who was the SS Gestapo? Because the Nazis around Stengel were even higher, like SS Karl Wolf and Mr. Wagner. And the Washington Post article says, the hunt for Stengel eventually led to the discovery of his deputy, Gustav Wagner, in São Paulo, Brazil, in 1980. Now, Wagner was discovered, and four countries wanted extradition for him. Stengel died in a jail in Germany. And Romeo Tuma and the Brazilian government falsified the papers of Wagner, and Simon Wiesenthal knew that. They lied on the papers about Wagner and would not extradite him. So when 1985 comes around and Simon Wiesenthal is offering material that is of no value, but they use it anyway on the hip story and the identification, which is not based by real x-rays of teeth or anything else, he's throwing in this stuff to help Romeo Tuma, the police chief from São Paulo, Brazil, the federal police, who formerly and up till the hour of the military dictatorship, when the president-elect was murdered and he was reappointed by President Sarney, he has covered all these Nazis and is heavy in São Paulo in the narcotics traffic. And Tommaso Busato was sent to Italy, where he spilled the beans, unlike the mafia, because a member of his family had been killed, and was making the Syrian connections of narcotics traffic to São Paulo, Brazil. And Romeo Tuma is from Syria, and it links to Henry Arsène and the P2 and the various Nazi guns narcotics triangle that goes on throughout the world and had a big center down in Brazil. So after he gets a tip to take Fritz Stengel, he uses it. He's sent to Germany, as I say, he's arrested by the Brazilian police. And whatever deal he was, we know, and I know, that the secrets of Martin Bormann and Joseph Mengele, when Bormann's body, in quotes, appears in 74, he says, yeah, that's him, he's been long dead, even though he writes about him earlier as if he's alive. And all the top Nazis, Hans Ulrich Rudel, the head of the Luftwaffe, is flying back and forth to Germany, and he has the name of Hans Savelmeier, the money man for Joseph Mengele. Among his identifications when he dies, and there were more links than that to him. So Wiesenthal covers that up. Now, Wiesenthal writes in The Murders Among Us about Stengel and his experiences. This, the book he wrote was before Stengel was picked up and taken to Germany, and he tells how he worked with the Gestapo, and then he went down to South America. He went to Syria and lived there for a long time, and Damascus, and then he worked for the Volkswagen factory in São Paulo, Brazil. And Stengel is well known for his work in the Volkswagen area in Brazil. Now, the article I cited not too long ago from the Washington Post, March 31st, 1985, titled Brazilian Banking Regime Crumbles, and it's about Mr. Garnero, Maria Bernardo Garnero, and how the government of President-elect Tancredo Neves replaced a 21-year-old military administration with a democracy that was supposed to come in March of 85, and he said that that government was unable to account for billions of dollars, missing state funds, and Neves had called the financial corruption one of the most hated symbols of the abuse of power, and centered in on Mr. Garnero, who works with George Shultz, Henry Kissinger. Kissinger Associates is now representing Brazil now that Mr. Neves died after his seven surgeries that were outright murder. And he was investigating particularly the money of Mr. Garnero linked to William Simon, a Knight of Malta, to Bechtel Corporation, and so forth. Well, the Washington Post has a story about the Justice Ministry. This was in March, just at the time when Neves was dying, just about dead. He was supposed to be sworn in on, I believe, the 14th. The Justice Ministry has issued a restraining order freezing the assets of Garnera and 10 Brazil Invest advisors, and it lists those advisors and the president of Brazil's International Airline and of the Volkswagen's Brazilian subsidiary. In the same article, it tells about Mr. Garnero, who's wanted for billions of dollars of flight capital out of Brazil. He's a tireless promoter whose fortune was launched by his former wife's 22% stake in Volkswagen's Brazilian subsidiary. Garnero earned a seat on the car company's board and eventually amassed a fortune of $52 million. I've done some broadcasts on this scandal, but this man has, Mr. Garnero, $52 million in the Volkswagen subsidiary in Brazil through his wife's holdings and his that grew up in Brazil. And, of course, Mr. Fritz Stangl was employed in São Paulo with the Volkswagen, and this was a nest of Nazi spies documented in other books that assembled in São Paulo, Brazil. In Wiesenthal's book, he talks about how the Odessa network, the Nazi network, took him, Stangl, and his wife out of Vienna. And he, incidentally, the Franz Stangl that Wiesenthal's claim to fame, he was brought this deal or cut this deal by this other person. He worked at the same camp helping the U.S. Army where Stangl crossed his path and was with him, under him, working as Army intelligence. Stangl was located at a camp called Glassenbach after the war. And Wiesenthal describes how the Nazis were treated. They were well-fed, sunburned, had a pleasant life. They were high-ranking Nazis. Their wives were there. And Stangl was transferred from Camp Glassenbach, where Wiesenthal was working at the time, to a regular prison in Linz, Vienna. Stangl was a former police officer, and he wasn't just a police officer, Treblinka. He was one of the men that worked in the Castle Hartheim, H-A-R-T-H-E-I-M. That was the Nazi training place for scientifically learning how to murder, where they'd give pieces of gas or a little bit of gas, and they'd photograph people in stages of dying and send it to Berlin to see what was the quickest and most efficient to get rid of people. Stangl worked at this castle. Then he walked away from there in May 1948. His family was found by Wiesenthal, the wife and daughters. She was employed by the American Library in Vienna, by the military. In 1948, she got her paychecks from the United States money. Then the Odessa with Otto Skorzeny, who walked away from the prison where Kissinger had helped out, went, set up his Odessa and got him from to Syria, and then down in South America where they work with the whole network of Nazis that I've referred to over and over again. Now, the Syrian consulate was located in Bern, Switzerland, where Franz Stangl had run Treblinka, as has Karl Wolf had run Treblinka. Alan Dulles had his offices set up with the OSS, and Mrs. Stangl goes to Bern and picks up her passport, and then they leave Damascus, Syria, and go down to São Paulo. But interestingly enough, the very person who was offered to Wiesenthal for a fee if he wouldn't be arrested, the deal that he cut, had been at the camp where Wiesenthal was in charge of him while working for the American intelligence. So in 1968, they discovered Gustav Wagner. This was at the birthday party for Adolf Hitler in April, and he was photographed. Wagner went to the police department. I've had that on the air many times, and was protected and never was extradited. In 1979, when Romeo Tuma and the police and the officials of Brazil wouldn't extradite Wagner, why would Wiesenthal supply or help Romeo Tuma when he had this nest of people living with him, and SS Karl Wolf and all these people working with an enclave of Nazis down there? Why would Wiesenthal offer them anything, and why not stay off? Why on day two, June the 7th, did he say, yes, that is Mengele? Now, in the Washington Post story, again, citing April the 1st, 1979, pardon me, it goes into the budget of Wiesenthal in 1979 and said virtually all the money for his foundation came from Holland, from 90% Dutch Gentiles, and it was identified as the Royal the Shell, which is Prince Bernhard, who worked for the Waffen-SS, who was part of the IG Farben Corporation, married Queen Juliana, betrayed the resistance movement in Holland, and sat on it, and his name has been mentioned in one book, but his record is one of Waffen-SS and Gestapo formed the Bilderbergers later to slice up the rest of the world. So Klaus Barbie, who worked with the CIC, the same criminal investigation corps that Wiesenthal worked for after the war, Henry Kiesinger was in charge of them, was crushing all resistance and killing the resistance, and the people who fought Nazism through France and Prince Bernhard had this similar role. And Wiesenthal got 90% of his funds, according to this article, from Dutch Gentiles at that time period. Now, 1978, when the book came out of Nikolai Malox, I believe it was around that date, of Richard Nixon and the Iron Guard and Nikolai Malox coming to Whittier, California, not a word was said by the Wiesenthal Institution. Nothing about Otto von Bolschwing. I tried to contact them or reach them when Pete Carey and I smoked out this guy working in the Bay Area and his top Nazi connections in the United States. He didn't say a thing about it. Now, there was a time when a search for Mengele was escalated in 1980, and people were looking for Mengele. There was an offer of a $50,000 reward, $10,000 to the policeman who would catch him. There was a time period where they were looking for Joseph Mengele, and there was a rumor that he was a colonial dignitat. I've done broadcasts about colonial dignitat, that enclave between Chile and Argentina run by Germans that the DINA, the police, used after Pinochet was in and Allende was murdered for torture. The American CIA, Michael Townley, and George Bush, as director of the CIA, was participating with the agents from Colonia Dignitat. Now, Simon Wiesenthal sent out his bulletin January 31st, 1981, from Vienna regarding... he has a thing about Gustav Franz Wagner and the countries that wanted to extradite him and how he wasn't extradited. And then he put that later he commits suicide by throwing himself in front of a car and Wagner died. I don't know if there's any proof that Stengel or Wagner even did these things. Now that I look back at most of these Nazi deaths, when the heat is on, they suddenly die. But in his bulletin, The Search for Joseph Mengele, he tells about the reward and the offer. And then he said somebody said they located, they thought they located Mengele, a colonial dignitat, he described as an isolated German settlement in Chile. But it seemed we were misled by people who wanted to give the colonial dignitat a bad name. Now, this is identical to what Simon Wiesenthal said about the FBI with the Russians, the Americans who were in this country, who had done the torturing and murder of the Russians in those camps, Kushel and Jazowick. He's saying that people want to give Colonia a bad name. Now, in 1979, 2 years before he said that, Jack Anderson had a syndicated column in the Monterey Herald, San Francisco Chronicle, throughout the country, called The Nazi Connections. And he said, over the year, I've reported eyewitness accounts of Nazis, dictatorships, havens for Nazi war criminals. And he talks about Chile, Paraguay, Uruguay, Brazil, and Argentina. He said there's an international consortium known as Operation Condor. They executed Orlando Letelier. This is the George Bush connections to Germany and Mr. Strauss in Bavaria and our CIA. It tells about the DINA, and he says the police of the Chilean dictatorship, Augusto Pinochet, works with these Nazis at a Nazi enclave called the Colony, Colonial Dignitat. It's located in Chile. An informed source says that DINA maintains the detention center. The colony, the allegations are that they torture. And he's the one who wrote, I believe it's Jack Anderson, wrote about quartering people and burning them alive. The allegations are made that German personnel described as former Gestapo and SS officers give instructions in torture techniques that take part in application of the techniques. The colony, a commune, was established after refugees from the German Luftwaffe, and then Hans Ulrich Rudel, set up for officers at the end of World War II. The CIA sources identified the leader as Franz Richter, F-A-R-A-N-Z, Richter. The colony is run in military fashion. The men wear uniforms and have close ties to the Chilean dictatorship. Jack Anderson goes on that the colonial dignitat has contacts, maintains them, with Nazi elements in South America, Europe, and, of course, in the United States. Now, on World Watchers, back in 1979, in April and May, Bromgram 385, 386 and 387, I go into detail of colonial dignitat and the Nazi connections and fascism. This is 2 years before Simon Wiesenthal is saying that to suggest Mengele is down a colonial is to give colonial a bad name. You can look up these references to colonial dignitat on my program, and I cited Aftermath, where Ladislas Fargo on page 466 refers to Nazi war criminal Martin Bormann, moved to Chile and stayed a colonial dignitat during the early 60s. And then Das Reich, the Organization of Nazis in Exile, has their center of colonial dignitat. And also Counterspy, that came out in December 1978, a long article by Conrad Eeg. Now, all of this was out 1 and 2 years before he said that we're giving it a bad name. And keep in mind, in 1979 and also in 1981, Heritage, a Los Angeles newspaper, referred to the fact that Simon Wiesenthal had 80% of his funds from a Dutch SS officer, Prince Bernhard. 80% came from Prince Bernhard. This was cited in 1981 in the LA Heritage, that the Dutch monarchy, Royal Dutch Shell, non-Jewish, were funding Simon Wiesenthal. That's at a time when he's protecting those people down there. I just have time to cite one more example of Simon Wiesenthal's connections. In his bulletin in Wiesenthal Center, 1985, he has a picture of Arnaud de Borchgrave, described as a best-selling author, speaking, lecturing in California on Middle East and Latin American affairs. Imagine what he knows about Latin American affairs. In reference to the war in Lebanon, Mr. de Borchgrave's lecture was co-sponsored by the Jewish Studies Institute of the Wiesenthal Center, along with Committee on Media Accountability. Now, Mr. Arnaud de Borchgrave is the publisher of Reverend Moon's paper, The Washington Times. Just this past week, August 7th and 8th, and I will put them on the air soon, I detailed every word of the articles by Jonathan Quitney that I mentioned last week about the relationship of Francesco Pazienza of working for the CIA and for SISMI, Seize Me, the initials for the Italian military intelligence, not just the intelligence like our CIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency of Italy, working with Michael Ledeen, the well-known media propagandist, and how Ledeen co-authored with Arnaud de Borchgrave material about Billy Carter, and they sent a person from Italian intelligence with a tape recorder to link Billy Carter to Mr. Habash and the PLO, so that, of course, Ronald Reagan would get the Jewish vote. All of this published by Ledeen in Washington Quarterly, a magazine put out by the Heritage Foundation, the Mellons, and the people that have set up all the right-wing policies of Ronald Reagan. And de Borchgrave, working with Ledeen, who was working and is in the Defense Department and State Department under Alexander Haig, whose mentor, again, is that notorious Fritz Kramer, going back to the Dachau trials, and Adolf Hitler's team of Skorzeny, Barbie, and the gang Hess and Bormann that all got away. So a guest at the Wiesenthal Center talking about these studies is de Borchgrave. Now, incidentally, David Emery had asked me about information about Reverend Moon, the KCIA, and the CIA, and I pulled out for him a reference from Toronto paper reprinted in the San Francisco Chronicle by Mark Gain in 1979, how the Reverend Moon was set up. The Reverend Sun Ming Moon of the famous Moonies in the United States came to town. He was set up by Tongson Park, deeply involved with the KCIA and the CIA, and how he infiltrated into the Washington scene. Reverend Moon's being part of the CIA and the KCIA, and this article says the KCIA director, Kim Jong-il, set up Moon's Unification Church as a political tool, along with his front organization, the Korean Culture Freedom Foundation. So the KCIA and Reverend Moon are set up by a group whose purpose is to control every facet of life and form police states. And the editor of the Moon paper is brought to the United States, not the editor. The editor was Arnaud de Borchgrave. He has been a journalist for Newsweek and has used his bona fide with Robert Moss for violent anti-Soviet work, known throughout the media for his slanted news, his outright lies. But as late as 1985, with the Borchgrave's record, and I think when Wiesenthal got this out, I wasn't sure if he was editor at the time, but de Borchgrave's background was well known as a propagandist, and also the trials in Italy going on since 1979. By 1981 and 82, they identified Michael Ledeen and Francisco Pazienza and Arnaud de Borchgrave. This was going on several years ago, and he's a guest at the Wiesenthal Center speaking about information and affairs and references to correspondence and distortion of media. These people have not only distorted media, they've distorted history, all at our expense. Well, I don't have any more time. I'll update Wiesenthal over and over again, but I did want to get a little background more on him. So in other broadcasts, I'll keep including references to him that are appropriate. But in the meantime, our time is running out, so I'll be back with you next week. This is Mae Brussel, and keep sending the articles and books. Thank you very, very much, and I will thank you individually as time allows. Bye-bye.